Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. And I'm Bruce Cameron, and I'd like to introduce Justin Nimmergood. He's with us today.
Hello, everyone, and happy Monday. I hope everyone had a wonderful weekend doing whatever it was that you were up to this weekend. I know myself, you can't probably see it too well right now, but I'm pretty red and toasty from the beach on Saturday. A little more sunscreen would have been advisable. But nonetheless, it was still a good time, and enjoyed all the frills of beautiful Southern California, and short weekend but a good weekend. How about yourself, Bruce?
Actually had to do a little bit of work in New Braunfels, which is kind of like the new Austin, south of San Marcos, right there on the San Antonio border. So it was it's been scorching hot down here in triple figures. COVID hadn't slowed down some of that traffic or that town, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. I didn't book a hotel. I was kind of doing it on the fly. I had to go to two or three different hotels before I could get in. So it was, but we made it in there and did what we had to do and drove back. So, nothing like that Interstate 35 traffic. It's not as bad as Southern California, but
so you construction. How long down there?
Just so it was a quick trip, as quick as it could be. But so yeah, other than that, man, just sticking around here. Haven't been traveling like I used to, back, at least out of state travel. I've been doing some in state travel, but not the out of state traveler like I used to be.
So it's a little different right now. You know, since we don't have a guest on with us today, I thought it'd be, good if we could kind of just touch base on status of the states for that matter, right? Like, I'd be curious to hear from your perspective, what's the latest and what are some of the latest, either stay at home or not stay at home orders going on in Texas and, kind of what you're seeing as far as opening back up or not opening back up. And just kind of give our listeners a bit of, national perspective here.
Okay. We're more on the open up side of the house here in the Southeast Conference. The Ags and the entire Southeast Conference will light up last part of the month, start a 10-game schedule. So I don't know how they're going to do seeding in these SEC arenas, but they're definitely going to go ahead and proceed with football. I know in the Texas school, Texas A&M, University of Texas, they're all – the campuses are live. Several of the classes are online. But if you have a class that has a lab, they encourage you to take that live. And so a lot of the engineers and others that have laboratory are taking those classes live. So it's seemed like the campuses, for the most part, on the campus itself, people are adhering to wearing masks and social distancing. Not so much at frat parties and hotels, swimming pools.
So, yeah, I kind of have my own story, not frat party necessarily, but, I do socialize every now and again. And last week I went out for Taco Tuesday to, it's in Costa Mesa. It's probably like 10 minutes from where I live. And I was astonished actually at how many people were out and not social distancing. So, I think it's one of those things that, you know, there are a lot of, you know, companies and institutions and educational institutions are trying to be by the book, but there's still a lot of kind of underground shadiness going on for sure. You know, and I was kind of surprised to see that it was basically like a club.
Yeah, right.
Better term. So that's been kind of interesting to see. And obviously, I know we kind of texted about it a little bit over the weekend, but there's obviously some interesting dynamics going on politically right now, too. You know, obviously the shooting and that unfortunate death, and then, you know, I tell you what, that is just nuts, bizarre. And you know, working on kind of the, you know, the legal side of the house, I'm curious, you know, what your perspective is on what happened there.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's obviously very unfortunate. You know, I know that when these peaceful protests turn into people dying and damage being done and those things, it turns into something different, you know? So I think by day, these things are one thing. And then by night, after a certain amount of time, they turn into another. And so it's just a interesting portrait of government that, you know, it's, you know, this is happening in Trump's America and all this and that, which is true. I mean, Donald Trump is the president, but also you don't jump in there with your executive powers until the local government has felt like, you know, they've exhausted all their resources, their police, their diplomacy, or whatever else. And so you want to defer to the local government to try to manage their city and town, you know? But I'll tell you one thing, that as a guy who's testified in many federal courts, that property, that federal court, that building, yeah, that's a whole different planet. You know, you mess with that building and
be prepared, you know, for a world of hurt.
Be prepared for the drones to drop hydrogen bombs around that perimeter, because that is sacred ground, man. I don't care if it's in Portland or Seattle, Austin, you know. Oh, hey, we can talk about Austin. Did you hear about what the governor was going to do there, if they were going to take?
I actually didn't. Well, why don't you?
I'll finish my political rant, being a former federal person. That is, you know, it's almost like an Indian reservation. You know, you wouldn't desecrate, you know, if the Shoshone Nation had a spot there that was dedicated to an Indian tribe, well, that's their land. Period in the story. Anyway, I'll get off that. So in Austin, which is kind of an interesting town here, it's the capital of Texas, but you wouldn't know it if you. Anyway, just kidding.
It doesn't behave like a capital city.
I'm sorry, I was wrong. Anyway,
no, it's okay. We'll forgive you that you're an Aggie.
Forgive the boomer thing, but yeah. But anyway, so there was going to be this motion to defund the police, and Governor Abbott said, okay, I won't raise property taxes.
Okay. For how long?
As long as he deems it.
All right.
That cuts off people who like to run things on taxes.
Yeah, that's...
You want to cut that? I'll cut that. And that's a wrap. So, boy, that was a quick... checkmate move.
I don't know how,
you know what, maybe
you guys maybe have policies for the now, and it's almost like the Social Security or something. Like, I feel like Texas runs the state like how Social Security was formed. It's everything for the now, and I mean, how is this gonna you know, be properly funded 30 years from now?
Yeah. In other words, there's just certain things you don't try to take money from without a huge consequence. And that's the message. You take money from this, we'll take money from that immediately. So maybe y'all should think about revisioning the police at first and have some policies rather than just a dramatic, we can revision stuff. We can come up with more progressive policies and have social workers in Crown Victorious.
Mm-hmm.
But don't just go right off the, it's the same thing. It's an executive move to another executive move. So it's an interesting, a thing there, but what a dividing line, right? What a dividing line that we have here and then how this will play out politically. And then just to see how the tenor of things change on November 4th or whatever, depending on who wins, of course. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I can't imagine. I feel so sorry for those people living in cities where there's a lot of unrest, and it must be a scary feeling, you know.
It's such a weird time, you know, Bruce, just to be living in this. Like, I still have a hard time going out and seeing people, like in myself with a mask on. It's just like, you know, almost unbelievable that we're here and this is really going on. Although some people say it's maybe a, you know, conspiracy theory and all that. I know some people have their opinions on all that, but it just is, it's strange. It's a strange time to be alive, to, you know, be a working professional. It's just, it's different. And, you know, I know for me, I'm sure my kids or, you know, relatives or whatever, you know, will look back down the road and say that was a monumental, you know, point of time in history, right? It'll probably be in history books or whatever in the future, but it's just different. And it really challenges status quo. And I think, like we've talked about, right, to be a successful entrepreneur coach, you know, you really have to be on it. And you have to be able to pivot almost daily now, I would say, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You're ready to just move and groove and shake your ass and make shit happen, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely done that on all my revenue streams. I have had COVID adjustments. The counseling practice went more, you know, social distancing live and hand sanitizing and masks to more Zoom, mm-hmm. Zoom sessions such as this. Mm-hmm. Also, I talked about the conversion to Venmo and Cash App. I can't tell you the dramatic increase in how I've been paid via those applications. With the federal revenue stream, that we were able to successfully get many inmates released under COVID-19 and using CDC procedures to, you know, low-risk federal offenders to be placed in home detention rather than in a federal prison that might have a high saturation mm-hmm. of COVID-19, particularly if they have upper respiratory conditions and those things. And able to assist attorneys in writing motions for compassionate release, for CARES Act, and then even motions for resentencing for people who are maybe served 85% of their time. Well, I wouldn't say that, 80% or a little bit less of their time, and they were not risk mm-hmm. to modify the sentence. Never thought I'd be doing that, you know what I mean, as a former federal guy, but man, would you know, once. You know, we just kind of knew the mechanisms, and we were able to give guidance to these attorneys. I got hired now by the Federal Public Defender's Office in Hawaii, Colorado and Wyoming. So we have active contracts with those individuals
mm-hmm.
that look at classification and placement for sexual offenders, considering the COVID pandemic and their own physical safety to not get hurt. in a general population yard. So that was a huge adjustment, and then coaching, the issues and concerns that people have, you know, some of those initial goals, business goals, personal goals, shoot, all that got turned upside down, you know, with the pandemic, and as a coach, had to pivot with my client to really prioritize and see, you know, what we can do for the client, and move from there.
You were doing a lot of in-person travel.
You're
working with a lot of athletes, jockeys, UFC fighters.
You had a pretty diverse
set of clients, obviously, that you're working with. Mm-hmm. And moving with them and pivoting with them. So would you say that coaching needs are on the rise, the same or less than before COVID? And what type of requests are you getting like right now?
Yeah, I think I would say that the coaching need would be increasing. Okay. As I've always said to our viewers and listeners, I've been a little bit of an anomaly in the coaching space, but I would say from what I've heard from other coaches and colleagues in the space that's been going up. I think also what you have is more of an existential crisis that people, if they didn't have self-meaning, if they don't wake up in the morning and know why it is they're living, you know, and or what to live for or what's next in their life, that's a stressful time, man. And if I didn't, or anybody doesn't have those kind of cornerstones in place, it makes your life really difficult. You're responding to the election and what candidate, and you're just living this life of fear or disappointment. Mm-hmm. I've had people say they don't want to have children in this world, you know, that this is a bad place, you know, and let me tell you, you know, that there's a, certainly the world is getting more challenging, you know what I mean? So I've said that it's on the increase, but I would also think that the content of the coaching is now taking a very hard personal turn toward spiritual and existential and, you know, self-identification stuff.
Yeah, some of it's actually good because some of it's going back to the basics, I say, of, you know, you mentioned a second ago, purpose of your life, right? Or meaning of your life, your why. I have to go back to the basics again and revisit some of that because, you know, the environmental, external environment, environmental factors right now are necessitating that people completely reevaluate that. And maybe not come up with completely a new set of why and you know, mission and goals and all that. But I would imagine that 90% of people are certainly adjusting it and probably adjusting it pretty heavily, right? So I've actually, to your point, I've had a lot of work in that recently from a coaching perspective, which has been great. It's always good to revisit those kind of blocking and tackling items, you know, in the coaching practice. They're essential and foundational to anything we do and how we work with our clients. I know too, Bruce, you know, you've been having a lot of success with, your new outpatient.
The sober living environment.
Sober living facility. Could you maybe share, you know, with our listeners, because I know you provided a great update a couple weeks ago. What's new in the zoo there?
Yeah, just I've been really involved in the development of a sober living environment. The first project is for males, and this is just going to be different, a little bit different than your usual sober living environment. Traditionally, people will go into a rehabilitation program for 1 month, 2 months, whatever. They'll discharge from rehab into a sober living environment for a period of usually 90 days to reintegrate into society, to reintegrate back with their families, to learn all the relapse prevention techniques, harm reduction techniques, get reestablished with 12-step meetings in the community if that was part of their release plan, to connect with their medical or psychiatric provider for continuity of care, should there have been any pharmacological things that were part of their treatment. And so we're doing that but we're doing it where the person has an individual coaching or mentoring session every day. Every resident has is assigned a personal coach. There's myself and two others. And
how are they matched up? Are they matched up by?
I match them up.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm the clinical the program director, and I kind of match them up. And so then they'll have that. And this schedule, I mean, it starts at 7 a.m. Monday through Friday, lights out at 11, and there's programs throughout the day. It will be a tobacco. We will allow the use of tobacco, but it's very regimented. It's very controlled. But we are going to do that. But we have individual group offerings. We're also going to have an app for accountability and control. It'll be staffed with full-time staff. There'll be somebody there full-time, a house monitor there, all shifts of the day. It'll be ADA compliant. Obviously, it is going to be self-pay. Obviously, right. It's going to be self-pay, but we feel with, Price Waterhouse and Deloitte and all these other companies that are headquartering all your financial sector companies. But we're also going to open it up to people with sexual compulsive problems. So there'll be guys that were sex addicts that went through treatment. And usually those are men without a country, but they need a sober living environment as well, right?
Say that again, men without a country?
Yeah, there's not very many sober living environments for sex addicts. They're needed. Yeah.
One of those interesting slants that you guys will be providing.
Well, you think, yeah, I mean, did Tiger Woods go straight home after his last day in Laurelwood? No.
Doubtful.
So anyway, we're going to have people that have had addictive or compulsive behavior issues, and they'll be able to reside in the sober living environment. Their management might be a little bit different, but so this is going to be an interesting thing where I'm going to combine everything I know about coaching as a clinician, but also from the Federal Bureau of Prisons. We're going to have accountability room searches, frequent urine testing.
Really?
It's going to be something else, man.
I can pick their modules or programs that they join during the day, or are you going to kind of co-create it with them based on their needs, or how's that going to?
Absolutely, brother. You got that. So there'll be an assessment period. We'll kind of craft out what they need, based on their needs and where they are in their recovery. So we're not going to do this cookie cutter thing where one size fits all, which is, now look, if these folks have a job already, or if they have transportation to their job, that's fine. That's part of the sober living experience that they re-engage with work. But I think in a COVID era, I think a lot of these folks are going to be working with their laptops. So we've built in cigarette, tobacco, phone, and technology into the schedule. When I was working with I was doing placements for financial sector guys, and they had to access their technology every 47 minutes because they were making $5,000 to $10,000 an hour.
Wow.
And they would pay $80,000 a month for the rehab bed. This will be obviously a lot cheaper because it's a sober living environment. But a lot of those programs that were so rigid and wouldn't allow those guys to make money, that was a mistake. They went elsewhere. So we're going to have that capability. Now, hopefully here in the near future, we have a women's house on the way. And but this is going to be, right now we're calling it a project. We feel really good about the project. We have every belief that it'll be a success.
How many patients at capacity?
You know, I would say a very comfortable 10. Very comfortable 10. And that's an interesting number. It's not so hard to fill. We could go up to 15 if supply and demand is there. But certainly 10 is an easy number, and it works in this format. You know, the price point's considerably higher. I just don't think there's anything out there quite.
Yeah, you're like just providing a premium, sober living facility with lots of customized individual attention that they're not going to be able to get at some of the facilities, right?
Yeah, and you'll have an individual session every day, at least one, if not two. And that's built into the cost of the program. Now, if they need other mental health services, we have obviously mental health people there and or very nearby that they can connect to, and we have transportation. We can transport people. We're ready to have people fly in from Malibu and Boston and New York. We're ready for people who are wanting to get out of where they are to maybe chill out for a while in Texas.
Are you accepting applications and all that, or is it like, how is that process going to work?
How do they get in?
Yeah. Like, do they have to be referred by someone to get in, or?
I mean, depends. I mean, ordinarily I would suspect it would be referred by somebody, but if somebody contacts us and they meet the criteria of being over 30 days sober and those things, we have certain criteria, then we'll take a look at them. Yeah, they don't have to be referred from a rehab. Another thing I'm toying with is there are people that are on their journey going toward treatment. Mm-hmm. And if they're 30 days sober, and they're not sure what rehab to go to or what rehab is good for them. And if they were seeing that person for a few months while they made a treatment decision, and that way we could refer those guys into the rehabs, which would be a great business deal, because not only would we be receiving from rehabs, we'd be actually contributing to rehab census.
So does that make sense? You would house them as in... they would just have housing at that point, or would they still get some of the services you're talking
about? No, they get the service. No, if they're paying the price point, they're getting the services, the individual coaching or mentoring. We have mentoring, which is an interesting, its own entity is mentoring. So we have coaching and mentoring. But yeah, we would do that, right? They would still get the services based on where they are. And isn't that great? I mean, that's what coaching is about. So
you're serving all these different along this.
I mean, think about how many people in what area I'm in, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, but yeah, we'll say North Texas.
That area has plenty of pill addicted moms, I would say.
Well, yeah, but we're not doing that right now. But how many people, would have, they get a DWI or their second DWI, and they know they really need to go into treatment, but they're sober, but this and that, or maybe they're going to court and then they might have to go to rehab after that. That might be a good candidate. How many guys get caught masturbating or whatever, and their wife throws them out, and they don't know whether they're a sex addict or not, but they know they're they got kicked out of the house or what, you know what I mean? So how many, you know, or an affair or what have you, right?
Yeah, whatever.
And I mean, not acting out, but they're trying to make a decision on, but they need somewhere else to live, or maybe they need mentoring and coaching to kind of develop where they are in their problem, where they are in their recovery, rather, you know. And so that could be an idea. So this kind of bi-directional co-occurring population, I think, you know, once we start roll with that, it'll just increases the chance for the place to fill up, you know.
Are you going to have age limitations or restrictions?
Oh yeah, 18 and up, obviously. We want adults in there.
But you'll take them as old as, like, what, 60? I
mean, hey, wait, look at me.
Hey.
What are you talking about?
Specifically about you, Bruce.
But guys, this age, still getting in trouble. So anyway, yeah. And still needing help. So yeah, no, we'll take them as old as 60. Good Lord. We have the wheelchair ramps and there's an elevator in the house. The house has an elevator. We have ADA compliance. We have ADA bathrooms, you know. We have, you know, so we can definitely.
I can just imagine that there's a potential target market of executives out there that have had their run-in with this sort of thing and want to be very low-key, low-profile about it, that would probably want to be more at a, you know, smaller facility like what you're providing than a big, huge operation.
Right. And I was in that space from 2014, and particularly when Me Too, the first round of Me Too kicked off. I mean, that was that. I mean, people were getting identified left and right, and they had to be either coaching or this or go to rehab or sex addiction treatment or something to address the transgression that had occurred on the workplace or that was causing brand damage to the company or to a partnership or those things. You know, for instance, there's a rehab center in Alabama that really caters to neurologists, neurosurgeons, and doctors. I mean, hardcore physicians, and they need a sober living environment. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So you'd be shocked once you kind of, wow, like here's a rehab for, you know, 10 figure accountants. Here's a rehab for Tiger Woods's. Here's a rehab for neurosurgeons. Here's a rehab for actors. You see what I mean? So you'd be interesting to see how rehabs are now catering to a particular demographic.
No, I'm really, you know, excited for you. I think this is going to be, it's, you know, probably going to take some time to get it going, but it's going to have a groundswell effect after you do. And who knows, maybe you open a nationwide chain of these.
Our investors are looking at Zurich and some other places. So yeah, we're
already there.
Which is fine. So we'll I was there in 2017, 18. So we'd love to have a Zurich house out there on the lake. So that'd be lovely. But
That's cool.
We'll see. We'll see how this goes. And right now it's just a very strong pad, and it's really fun. It's really fun to create something that has coaching as its core, that has positive psychology at its core. Regardless of my prison background and accountability, just don't fuck up. But you know, anyway. It is fun to have coaching and mentoring as the real backbone of the program. Individualized services, lots of ancillary stuff. We also address family. We have family group at least once, if not twice. We have family visitation hours on site, you know, so I think it's as comprehensive. It looks like a rehab, honestly.
Well, I'm sure, but it's, you know, obviously done with a little bit of cachet to it.
Right. But it's coaching and mentoring. There's going to be rehabilitative gains, but I think we'll be able to address a level of service with those types of interventions that'll facilitate either, you know, getting back into the community, or for some of them, they may need to go back or go into treatment. So we'll see what happens. You know, I myself opened up a private practice many years ago, and I didn't really know who was going to come in. You know, water seeks its own level. And through time, right, through time, I kind of caught certain types of clients, right? You know what I mean? So,
attractive. You know what I mean?
So right, but I didn't know that. I didn't know that going in, Justin. I didn't just hang out a shingle and say, "Oh, I'm going to have unicorns and this." I mean, I whatever. But you know what? I did hang out the shingle, and I did have a level of service. And then, you know, through time and branding or whatever, it all came together. Interestingly, that we do have this branding officer that is very.
Chief branding officer? Is he
the Well, it's more of a consultant, but it's been very interesting to see how she thinks of things, and there's that push pull where you want to go, like a branding officer wants to go all out with certain types of things, and I'm like, no, it's like we're like marketing a battered women's shelter. You know what I mean? Like, we don't want.
It's right. Public.
Right. But we want you to know that it's there and it's nice and it's very competently run by very competent individuals. But right. Because what if, you know, what if some MTV star is there? What if some.
Yeah, they're going to want their anonymity.
You betcha. You betcha. So between anonymity and tobacco friendly. We're gonna fill that place.
Gonna fill that place right up.
Fill that place, man.
What would be cool though, Bruce?
I'm messing with you, man.
I'm thinking out loud here. It would be kind of cool, you know, when you guys do get it up and going. And obviously, I would say, you know, not getting, you know, patients on camera, but just to do, you know, one of these from there. Right. That'd be kind of neat,
right? Right. I did a YouTube video on my other revenue stream on a recently released inmate that got out under COVID-19 procedures and got, 3 or 4 years home confinement, which is a huge W, huge win, which is better than 4 years in prison. But and I had him do something. So I kind of tested that, and that went well. And I think what my plan is I'll have other executives that are further in their recovery that I know of, and have them kind of, you know, either facilitate a meeting here and there or kind of tell their story, right?
Wow. As a way to build the tribe up. And
you betcha. I'm CEO of XYZ. It's like, you know, even a guy like me, while I'm a fairly respectable individual, you know, I've never made $1 billion. I don't know the stress of that, man. I don't, it's incredible stress when you're trying to navigate through multi millions of dollars of wealth and this and that and the other. And I can understand that to a point, but I don't know. Right. And so I feel sure that we're going to need some of these, you know, almost Mark Cuban-esque kind of guys to come in there from time to time and say, look, this is what I did, and this is how I reintegrated, and this is the boundaries I have in my life now. So they can hear it just like an AA meeting, but they can hear it from a person, you know, that's doing it. You know, we're not just talking trash or talking stuff about coaching and goals and whatever. So they can actually have this teach one, see one, do one. And I think that's the mentoring. I think the mentoring is going to be priceless, because I think although these guys are very wealthy, that they don't have good life skills in certain sectors of their lives.
That's so true. That is so true. And it's so important in both coaching and mentoring to be relatable. And, you know, to your point about saying, hey, you don't know what you don't know. And, you know, I don't know about, you know, managing $1 billion either. And I would not be a good person to coach or mentor someone who is in that situation. So obviously connecting the dots with the right people.
That's right. All the way down the line. Yeah, all the way down the line from parenting to, you know, entrepreneurs that are thriving and survived their own pathology. Or managing their own pathology and still surviving. I think that's going to be real good, man. Now we have 2 minutes left and you can't get me talking about this stuff. Oh, man.
Bruce, I was excited to hear about it. And since I'm not going to be back out there for a while, you know, I wanted to make sure, you know, cause we have mentioned it on here a couple times.
Yeah, we have.
You know, I know it's your baby right now. So you're
my baby. Yeah, man, it's my baby. Yes, indeed. So I'm all excited about that. So, yeah, I mean, so anyway, for what it's worth. So, yeah, that's a nice thing. And look, and it really adds value to my life. You know, I'm going to wake up and just have yet again, I have plenty of reasons to live, of course. But boy, this one and just, man, I think sober living is going to be the new treatment. I think we're in a COVID era. Possibilities are limitless. You know, once this thing gets going and I can get some vision casting and thought leaders and, you know what I mean? I'm really kind of, okay, where can this really go? You know,
it's shining the spotlight back on health again.
Yeah.
COVID has for sure. Yep. And so this is obviously part of that. I mean, it's a different slant for it, but part of it. So I see everyone is putting a premium on health because you kind of are forced to right now. And truth be told, you should anyway, because if you know, you can have all the success in the world, but if you die early because you aren't taking care of your health, then who the hell cares? You know, without your health, you don't have really much of anything.
Exactly. Exactly. So, well, folks,
we're out of time here.
There it is. There's another one down here. No, Justin, thanks for baiting me into that, man. But no, yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. Another great show on the Concierge Coaches Show. It was good that Justin and I got to touch base with you all. We miss you guys. We've had guests, and both Justin and I have been extremely busy with our endeavors, and we appreciate everybody's patience. But it's good to see everybody out there. Please come back and with us next week here on the show, and we'll see what we have for you then. Maybe a guest, maybe another exciting discussion that won't be so one-sided.
It won't be one-sided, Bruce. You're adding value the whole time.
So it's part of my show anyway. Just kidding. But yeah, so we'll see. Facebook page, the Concierge Coaches on Instagram, LinkedIn, and I can be reached at conciergecoach.net. And Justin, how can folks reach you?
Nimmergood.com, everyone. So look forward to connecting you over the coming weeks. And like I said, we're looking forward to having another great show for you next Monday.
Next Monday. Okay, everybody. Take care. See you next time on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. See you then.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood only on LA Talk Radio.